Meaning there, Sangha, thank you for being here. Thank you for your practice. And so lovely to sit together. And thank you, Cambridge Insight, for inviting me and highlighting the book, Healing Our Way Home, Black Buddhist Teachings on Ancestors During Liberation, which I'm so happy to co-author with my friends Valerie Brown and Kyra Jo Lingo. The project was really one of a deep journey into our friendship, our spiritual friendship, and the actual writing was a talking. We talked the book out. We met and on Zoom for over a year, and had a different theme each time, and responded to the question, the theme, and then riffed off what the person before us said, and it became really a deep Dharma sharing, because it was at times I think we forgot we were being recorded, and that this recording would later become public or be consumed publicly. And so it really, not only were we doing this for an external facing book, we were doing it for our own healing. This happened in the process. All of us felt there were things that we had been holding for our lifetime that went deeper in our conversations, our dialogue, and healed. And so it's for us also a very special book, because it's a healing for us. And we just hope that others who share that book, read that book, also find the healing that we found in it. Particularly as three Black female identified persons in the world. And the book it says Black Buddhist Teachings, and it's not just for Black folk, and it's not just for BIPOC folk. And I make a point of saying this before I share a reading or two, because another interviewer somewhere, someone specifically suggested it was only for Black people or BIPOC people, not for non-BIPOC or white people. We want to really put that aside, because while it is for Black folk like ourselves who have similar experiences, BIPOC folk of color, Black Indigenous people of color, it's an intimate conversation that brings everyone into basically our living room, our kitchen table. And so there's wisdom there for everyone. And what we've learned from a lot of non-BIPOC who've been studying the book in book study groups, in Sangha groups, is that it's the conversation that they have wanted to have with BIPOC people, but haven't been able to have because sometimes as BIPOC, we get a little tired of sharing who we are and why we are and how we show up. And so this is a listening in, if you will, to that conversation, and has really helped some people go a little deeper in understanding. And so that's just one example of how specifically it does reach a broader audience. Yeah. So I'd like to read something. I have two parts to read, but I'll read one and we'll see how that goes. I just read this recently, actually, at another book event. But wasn't able to get as much into it and make some of the connections. And so I'm hoping to do that this evening since there's a little bit more time. So I'm reading from the last chapter. It's called Don't Get Me Started. And so, and it's page 172. And it's the only conversation, or it's the only chapter in the book that's really a conversation where there wasn't a theme, pre-planned theme, where we sort of went around and shared about it more at length, took turns. This one was really, it was a quick conversation. It was more, someone said something, and a person said, "That's right." And it sort of evolved, and at the end of the conversation, I think it was Valerie who said, "I think we should call it 'Don't Get Me Started,' because that's kind of how it started. Was something was said, and you know, some of those topics where you say 'Don't get me started,' and then you really get started. So that's kind of what that last chapter is." And this conversation, this particular part is, we're talking about really the way Valerie's talking about in some of the places she has been in as an attorney, what Black people need to do in order to be seen and be heard, even though everybody has the same qualifications, just the way whiteness shows up in some spaces that it just takes up a lot of space. And so this is basically the conversation that we're riffing off each other in actually a pretty quick tempo. So I'll read this and then I'd like to share about the Diamond Sutra and how this very deep Mahayana sutra teaching is really a foundation of the understanding of our racial and ethnic identity. Right, but I'm speaking about how we've come into our sense of being. I've come into my sense of being from feeling inferior, from feeling not enough, from feeling like I have no self-worth. Coming from that to feeling now, I couldn't care less what people think about me. I see the world in a very different way. I don't need people to affirm me or make me feel like I deserve to be on this planet. I'm here and that's it, right? My value is not relative to whiteness or blackness or brownness or any oneness anymore. So we, as people of color, we find a spiritual path and we begin to discover ways out of how we were brought up. I now see my power, right? But so many white people, they've gotten their power from our having less power, their status from our being lower than them. Tay's teaching of you're like that because I'm like this, and I'm like this because you're like that, is powerful and real. So that quote, you're like this because I'm like, you're like this because I'm like this, and you're like that because I'm like this, and I'm like this because you're like that. It's a quote that it's an interpretation that comes out of the Diamond Sutra, which is why I want to spend some time with that after I finish this section. It's as if those who benefit from whiteness were born right into power because of the presence and oppression of Black people or BIPOC people. This is as regards their identity relative to others in the world. They didn't have the suffering we Black folks have had. And maybe this is the depth of the Dharma. They didn't have the suffering to figure out their real worth. They are missing the mud of racial inferiority that can grow the lotus of self-love and acceptance. We have this suffering in a process of peaceful understanding of our power. I mean, sometimes not so peaceful, right? Granted over time and much suffering. Not having that, I think, has been a disservice to so many white people. Now I'm looking long term, when a white population realizes that they've built their sense of self, their sense of who they are as beings based on a superiority complex. What happens when that breaks apart? So, of course, whiteness cannot handle that because it hasn't always had to. So the skills are not there. So many who identify as white would not be able to handle this truth, this corruption of the foundations of their values, like what happened with the opioid epidemic in the early 2000s. We saw this explosion of opioid use in the white population at the end of the housing fiasco. White people turned to drug use to numb themselves from the housing crisis and its resulting poverty. That's a really good example of what happens when white people lose status due to poverty. They find their perspective of themselves deflated and they don't know what to do. So what do in this instance? Like many, they turn to something to numb their pain to escape it. I think there's this way where the suffering in this skin and all my identities and the way I've grown up and the strife I've faced has really transformed something in me that isn't based on being better than anybody, right? There's something to that suffering. For me, that's why Dharma is so deep, because there is something that comes out of the suffering that really makes you different. This practice is one of pausing and looking deeply. Why? To see what is there, to understand how and why the suffering has come about, and to find a path away from it that is healing. And after this section, we have a practice pause, so I want to invite us to practice together now. So just begin by allowing yourself to take a deep breath in. Sit up and just let what was shared drop away. And come back to your breath. We shared breath earlier, so let's come back to that breath. Let's pause. And find this ground again, this sovereignty again. Breathing in and feeling calm in the body. Breathing out and feeling ease in the body. Thank you. So what I'd like to do is unpack this this notion of where I speak about my value not being relative to any anythingness, whiteness, blackness, brownness, anythingness, and this teaching of I'm like this because you're like that, and you're like that because I'm like this. So if we're familiar with the Diamond Sutra, again, it's a Mahayana sutra. But there's an equivalent, or there's many equivalents actually, in the Pali Canon on non-self, right? Because that's really one of the deep teachings of the Diamond Sutra, is a teaching of non-self the non-separateness of what we call a self, and how when we get caught up in this sense of we're separate. We're just separate self, that this is where all the problem, this is where everything foundationally just proliferates. So we have in the Pali Canon, one, the Anatta Lakana Sutta, which is a discourse on the non-self characteristic. For those of you who want to enjoy that, that's Sutta Nikaya 2259. Let me put that in the chat. But I'm not going to focus on that. I'm actually just this is the characteristics of non-self. What I'm going to focus on tonight is the Diamond Sutra. And the full name of the sutra is the Diamond That Cuts Through Illusions. Because the illusion is that we are separate, that we are a separate self. So hence we have these different identities as black folk, as brown folk, as white folk, as Asian folk, as Latinx folk, as Native Indigenous folk, Southwest Asian, Southeast Asian folk. So I also want to put in a disclaimer here about, please don't take my words into being spiritual bypassing, because there's a tendency to do that as well, right? We're all one. There's no separation. We're just, now that we're sitting in a sangha and we're meditating together, I don't see your color anymore. Well, no, that's not really true, is it? The reason we have BIPOC sanghas is particularly because of the pain of sitting in majority white spaces and being treated in very different ways, and not nice ways, right? Because the collective consciousness doesn't stay outside the meditation hall or the Dharma Sangha space. We bring it right in, right? Here I am, all of me. And so this idea of we're all one, and we're, when we sit together and when we share, we're past our internalized oppression as BIPOC folk, or our racial superiority as non-BIPOC folk, as white folk, that is an illusion also that we want to take good care of. What I want to talk about is the notion that the Diamond Sutra really tries to get us to understand that once we identify as a separate self, that we then are able to see everyone separate from us. So once we say, I am the self, it gives us the grounding, the foundation to then say everything is then relative to me, right? Or I am relative to that one, or I am relative to that other one, or I'm relative to this other one, because we're separate, okay? So what I'm referring to in the not relative is the freedom that comes from the teachings, that at some point in this path of healing, especially healing for people of color, this ownership that we have deep in our bones of racial inferiority, the healing there is really the deeper freedom of not being equal to white people. It's really to be free enough to know that we're not separate actually from white people, right? We're not separate from anyone. That's the freedom. That's beyond the chains. That's the freedom of the Dharma, where we then start seeing ourselves in this non-self way. In the Diamond Sutra, it talks about notions that we want to let go of, and the first one is that notion of self. We want to really let go of it, because as long as we hold on to it, it's what gives us this way to justify the different other separate categories. Because once we identify ourselves as this I entity, this self entity, it allows us to then other others, right? Because there's me, and then there's others. There's, oh, I'm me, Maricela, and then there's you, Danette, there's you, Amanda, there's you, Em, there's you, Dario, right? And you all are other than me, right? So that's the deep teaching, is that once we hold and cling to this separate self-identity, it allows me to then other you. And there is what allows all the different identities, not just racial identities, gender differences, different gender identities, different, everything comes from that, right? And there's a, it's not just a political designation, it's not just a social designation, because that's the other part I want to get to in the Diamond Sutra, is once we get the depth of the non-self, we can go back into the realm, the understanding of the mundane realm, and identify where those differences are being used to cause harm. So I'm not saying that those differences aren't real, that they don't exist and they don't cause suffering. What I'm saying is we have to penetrate deep beyond those boundaries, those walls, those human-made differences, right? And understand what it is to be really free of the separate self. And then when we have that depth of freedom, that understanding, what it does, it allows us to be with the other identities in a way that's not separate. Okay? So there's a way we show this in the Dhamma Sutra. As I said, once we identify as a self, it causes us to define others, right? And it becomes a self versus others. So then it's easy, because that's our dualistic thinking, right? And we all know we're in the United States, especially, it's very dualistic, very individualistic society, right? Me and all about me. I got me, I'm gonna take care of me, right? I got it, you know, I got me, take care of me. And that individuality is really the crux of, at times, holding onto this understanding of the separate self, right? And then once we have that nicely packaged and tied up, then it allows us to just see ourselves versus every single other person. So that's our frame of reference. That's the way we move through the world with everything, right? The Diamond Sutra is very, very, it's a really, really deep teaching of the Mahayana tradition, because what it does, it says, this is the crux of it, y'all, right? It's a teaching of non-self, just as in the Pali Canon. But this is the crux, this is saying it in a different way. It's helping us see it. So when we separate ourselves, when we believe that we're really like a separate self entity and we're not connected, it allows us to say A equals A. It's only A. And A will never be equal to B. That's that versus, because it's a versus, right? I couldn't find the not equal sign. So this is a not equal sign. Okay. So it always will say, I am different from you. B is everyone else. Everyone else is B, right? Because I am always only I. I am A. Maricela, Maricela, Maricela. It's all about me. You know, I have just me. I'm just me. There's nothing else that makes up me, right? And I will never have anything similar to do with B. B is different than me. It's a separate self, right? What the Diamond Sutra is saying, right, is that actually, A has all the elements of everybody else, right? Because we have to first understand that A is not equal to A. And only when we understand that deep teaching, can we then say, yes, A is equal to A, because we do have to communicate with each other, and we have to use language where people know who we're talking to. You know, we can't say, I am the person who's made up from my mother and my father and my ancestors, and the food I ate today and the food I ate yesterday and the people I met yesterday who changed who I am. And, you know, we can't do that in conversation when we identify or introduce ourselves, right? So we do end up saying we are this A. But what the teachings is trying for us to understand is that we have to understand that this is just a way, a label, a way to communicate, supposedly effectively. But what you have to understand is that we are made up of many elements. Often we talk about in our tradition, in the Plum Village tradition, developed by Venerable Thay Thich Nhat Hanh, when we talk about this, we'll talk about the tea, right? There's so many calligraphies. Drink your cloud, right? Drink your cloud. So what does that mean? That means you're drinking your tea and you are aware that the tea is made up of non-tea elements. Right? It's made up of the cloud. It's made up of the cloud turning into water. It's made up of the farmer who planted the tea leaf, the seed, the other farmers perhaps who picked the tea leaves, the ones who packed them, separated, packed them, stored them, the sunshine that allowed the plant to grow, the people who transported it, who knows from which country, maybe this country, the busker, the person who stocked the shelf with the tea, all that is in this one cup of tea, right? That's the A isn't equal to A. You see, that's the expansive understanding of it's not one self entity, you see? And so when we say drink your cloud, it's pointing in the direction of this deeper understanding that you understand that what you're drinking in this moment is more than a cup of tea. You have dropped into the depth of what it is. Not just that, you understand that this, there is no separate self as who you are from others, you see? Another one we often use is the flower. You can look at a beautiful flower, you can look at this plant, and you can say, oh, it's a plant. But can you see the sunshine in its leaves? Can you see the person who grew it? Can you see the water that nourished it? Can you see the earth and all the elements in the earth? Because the earth itself is made up of many elements. So can you see in this plant the multi non-self dimension of the plant, right? Its relativeness to everything else. And also, because when you go to the store, you can't say, you can't go to Home Depot or the nursery and say, I'd like to buy that thing that has the earth in it, the sun in it, the water in it, the farmer in it, the person who transported it, the family in this country, right? We don't do that. We could, right? Because that's acknowledging the A has the elements of B and C and the elements of D and E and F. So you could write this as A equals B, C, D, E, F, G, H, like that, right? All the elements that make it up. And vice versa, right? So B and has elements of A. And this is where inter-R, this word inter-R by Thay brings us this word to help us go right into it, that everything inter-R, everything inter, you know, we could use the term that we use in other spaces, like intersect, everything intersects with each other. There's no separation, right? And in this way, we're able to come back here now to going to the store and saying, I would like this bamboo plant in the story, right? Or I would like a cup of tea at the store, or you're buying tea, I'd like a bag of tea or a pack of tea. So this teaching allows us to, around our racial identity, at some point, get to the point where we're liberated from this thinking that as Black people, as brown people, as white people, as Asian folk, as Southeast Asian folk, as indigenous folk, as Latinx folk, as elder folk, as youth folk, as queer folk, as folk with disabilities, as folk with jobs, or folk without jobs, that we're not just that. Yeah, we're not like defined by that. We're not, and when we let that kind of labeling not just limit us, but define all of who we are, like all this beautifulness of this interrelatedness to all that is, gets, it's like something beautiful that just got deflated into one thing, and that thing, if it's something that is a derogatory label, is even more so a deflation, right? So folks of color, you know, we carry with us this deep self-perception, this internalized oppression based on white superiority, settler colonialism, and this, the job that, you know, like they, my mom would say, the number it did on us, right? And how we are continuously undoing that. And when we get to the depth of the Dharma that this teaching is pointing us and directing us toward, is that the depth of it is that there is no separate self here. Black is like this because white is like that, right? We have a sense of our, of who we are based on what a majority population has told us we are. And we've taken it in, and we've digested it in our digestive system. We've let it be distributed through our blood vessels, our nerve tissue, everywhere in our body, so that it's really there in us. And that is not real. That story of who we are, first of all, it's a story. It's one group's story. And that has no depth to it, right? Because it's a separate story, and it's serving a purpose of separating us even more, right? And so that same story can allow us, even within BIPOC groups, to continue to separate ourselves. See, that's the freedom of the teaching. The freedom of the teaching is that there is no separation, right? So when we get into our groups, our different groups, we will always, as human beings, we will always go back to finding a way to separate if we don't understand the depth of this teaching, okay? That's why when we get into groups where I mean, let's throw this out here because it's everywhere now. The Democratic Party, right? That's a really good example. they're supposed to be the Democratic Party, or we can get into the Republican Party. They're always attacking each other, right? And it's because everything comes from this A equals A mentality, and it doesn't equal B. And so we are always going to always come back to the denominator of me, one, as a separate self entity. And it's always going to then be self versus others. And we're always, if we hold on to that, we're always going to find an other. You see? Because the holding on to the self as a separate entity requires an other. It requires an other. It's a teaching that I'm trying to understand with you in the way that I have come to understand that what it's directing us toward, what it's directing me to. You know, it's not once or twice or three times I've tried to dig into this sutra because it's a very deep sutra, especially when you first see this kind of stuff, right? Like, this is just not math, y'all, right? This is just not what we're told, okay? From high school, A is always equal to A, and it's never equal to B. And we're, right? And so using this kind of analogy to help us understand why it is so important, how radical the Dharma is, how revolutionary the Dharma is, because what it's saying is no. Actually, A has elements of other things in it, but for ease. But once we understand it, and we understand it, it has elements of other things in it. Okay, in the, you know, in the dimension where we're walking through every day, you know, we can understand that. But we have the wisdom, the insight that takes us to the other shore. We have that insight that have taught us that for communication purposes, for the way we organize the world, so that we move through the world in a certain way, we understand the world in a certain way. Yes, A equals A. It's the last part I'll add on to this is that, and I can stop the share screen here. What this kind of understanding does is it moves away from seeing someone and thinking we know who they are based on one or two particular characteristics or criteria that as a society we have dropped on, right? Again, it's for me often a negotiation between moving quickly and moving with understanding. So moving quickly is just taking the socialized norms and dropping people into them, right? I mean, you know, we all do this. We see someone, they have certain characteristics, and there's like, bam, there's a label. Ease, quick movement, and we keep moving, right? We keep moving. Or if we're engaging with them, we're engaging with them from that perception. We're not giving them their fullness of who they are, right? We're not seeing the A is made up of B, C, D, E, F, and all that, because it's very efficient to do that. The moving with understanding is a part where maybe we have a perception, you know, of course the mind stores things, consciousness has its labels, and it brings a perception forward, right? There's the verbal talk, self-talk. We have a perception, it drops in. Bam. But can we allow for more than just that? Can we not close the door, to tie that knot on that person now is that? Can we hold that door open and allow whatever time is needed to help us see the non-separateness, because that's the freedom. That's where we, that's what mindfulness is. Mindfulness is saying, stop, breathe, what is in your mind now? You know, it's kind of that self-talk, what you just, that label you just brought forward and then you jammed on the person. So mindfulness is like, take a breath, what just happened here? And the other part of it is, what else is here? What else is here? So can we be spacious enough? And I know we're talking, you know, this is broad, right? Because I know some people may say, look, this is a matter of harm, right? This is a matter of self-protection. This is a matter of safety. You're asking me to leave my heart open. You're asking me to show up from a space of openness, spaciousness, and love. Do you know what you're saying? And yes, I do know what I'm saying, at least in these, using these words. And I'm not saying them because I do it every single time. I'm saying it because I know how hard it is to do this. Because it's a moving, I mean, things are moving so fast, there's so much information, right? And we have things to do, we have places to go, we have people to see. And you're asking me to take my time, slow down, and be open enough to not jam this person into another hole and leave them there. Because yes, that's what I'm saying. But we're here tonight. You sat in silence for 45 minutes. So you're onto something. You think there's something there. You wouldn't have done it. And I know some of you, some of you are in my heart. And I know you show up in other places and you show up on your own cushion and chairs, cultivating this deep practice inside of you. And so we're showing up and we're saying we want to get free. And so this is part of getting free, is this, is what the diamond that cuts through illusion is pointing to. It's saying we have to do away with this notion that we are a separate self, we're non-self. We're non-self. We're made up of all these different entities. And we have to offer that to everyone. Because once we get stuck in the self, then we immediately other others. Or other, right? We drop them in there. And now there's, what we've done is we've just erected a barrier that we'll get, what we'll need to take down. You know, maybe you erect it initially because there's just not enough time. What I would say our practice is figuring out how to take those barriers down as we continue to practice. So I think I'll stop there. Thank you for your deep listening. I would like us to gather the energy that we have co-created together here this evening, your valuable time, our big hearts that are on this path of awakening, and all the love and good intention. Let's just gather it up, this intention of being awakened, of being peacekeepers and peacemakers. And let it fill us up and transform us in this very moment. And all the difficulties, let it be aided by this peace and love that we created. And when we feel full, let's let it flow out to all those beings that we may right now be in tension with, that they may benefit from our practice. And let it flow further to people we don't know, people we may know, people we'll never know. In particular, to areas that are in great conflict, for people who are in internal conflict and external conflict. May they benefit from our peacemaking and our path of awakening. May be like this now, may be like this always. Ashe.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.